We're returning now to Brian, Lisa, and Dave, bold entrepreneurs of taste, as they now switch their way from eating things that are truly disgusting to things that are truly sublime. Finally, in this portion of the podcast, actually drinking wine.
With that, what we're going to try and do here is see if we can ascertain any semblance of sweetness, acidity, bitterness, or tannicness to three wines that we have in front of us right now, okay. Possibly four. What we have here, we have a dessert wine from Bordeaux, a Sauternes, 2003 Chateau Piada. We have a Sancerre 2005, a Loire, a Sauvignon Blanc, and then we have a wine from Côte de Gascogne, Domaine de Pouilly, which is a Uni Blanc and Colombard blend. The practice session here, and this is really where it starts to get fun. The practice sessions where we actually taste wine.
It's been hours.
A Good Balance is the title of this one. It's on page 23, and I'll just read it in full. It's pretty short. Treat yourself to a good Sauternes, in which in general means a classified growth with Grand Cru on the label. Unfortunately, we do not have a Grand Cru Sauternes.
We have a disease called Funzalot.
Half bottles are common. We got a half bottle. And a good one, the high sugar content will be appetizingly counterbalanced by a high level of acidity. So it won't be all cloying, and you can sip it on its own or with a not-too-sweet dessert or cheese. She says to compare that with a slightly more inexpensive Bordeaux or Montbozillac. This is right in the middle. It's a not-too-expensive Sauternes, so we'll just, you know, see if we can kind of taste it to get a sense of its sweetness and acidity balance. Then she says, try a Loire white labeled Sec, which is a little bit more of a dry, I don't know French, but Sec means dry.
Absolutely.
Notice how acid it seems to taste, because this northerly region's naturally high level of acidity is not counterbalanced by any appreciable sweetness. Then taste an inexpensive white Vin de Paz Côte de Gascogne. It is obviously high in acidity, but look behind that to notice just how much sweetness has been left in it. You know, again, we're really trying to get a sense of balance here. And then she finishes this with start registering acidity levels as you taste wine. And then she starts going, you know, get going into the details a little bit. But let's get to the drinking.
Yeah, let's go here.
And I'm pouring wine, Brian's wine. Now we're going to start with the sip, Terrence.
Note my patience in not gulping it down right away.
Smells faintly. Am I crazy? But apple juice.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, okay. I can get that.
I can absolutely get that.
It's a very apple-y type orange. Yellowish orangeish tinge,
right,
to it.
Yeah, but it's not just the color. It's.
It doesn't smell overly acidic.
And it smells sweet. I mean, you can smell the.
Savory.
Now the question is once we actually taste this thing, is it going to be balanced? And are we going to be? Am I going to be able to tell?
I will say that one of the things about drinking wine, as opposed to drinking those other things that
we
tried,
battery acid.
There's alcohol in this too, and that's a whole other factor that you have to factor in.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to kind of distinguish the alcohol from the acidity and the sweetness.
It has a honey sort of consistency to it.
It's funny, you know, just from all the things that we had, you know, the honey, the all the different acids, the apple juice, the sugar. We talked about disassembling the wine.
Yes, deconstruction of wine.
Deconstruction
to its
of
original
wine.
Components.
It's easier for me to do that with this, and maybe because this wine isn't necessarily the best, but it's a good wine. But I can definitely tell the acidity. I can definitely tell the sweetness. I can definitely get that honey texture, and I get them as in and of themselves. You know, I'm able to pick it out
separate.
A little bit easier.
Yeah.
And I can taste it on the tip of my tongue, under my tongue to a certain extent, on the floor of my mouth, and then the top back of my mouth.
Yeah.
It lingers a little bit, and I can taste, it sort of does dissolve into its components the more you let it sip and swirl on your mouth a little bit. And
I think it's more acidic than I expected it to be.
It is.
It definitely is,
it is.
Yeah. It definitely is, and I think this is part the fact that this is not a Grand Cru Sauternes or anything like that.
Definitely get the honey sweetness. It's got a full mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you would expect a sweeter wine to
Forgive
have,
my ignorance,
right?
Is this meant to be a dessert wine?
This is meant to be a dessert wine, yeah. This
absolutely.
Is a dessert wine.
Okay.
Yeah, no question.
You know, which goes a lot to that texture, you know?
Yeah, I can really get that. Because I think this is proof that her system works, in that with all those other tastes fresh in my mouth, I can sort of look at this and say, I've got at least three different things going on here
right.
that are very distinct to what I've just tried. But I'm wondering with the other two...
It might be harder.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, that'll be interesting to find out.
Here in the book, Miss Robinson suggests opening a good Sauternes and then a slightly more inexpensive Montbozillac or something. She wrote this book in 1993 when the price of wine was much more reasonable.
if you'd only invested back then.
Oh,
yourself a Moton Rothschild.
1882, that
is. and notice the tannic structure compared to the 1982. So we have to kind of use what we can afford here. So we did get a lower level Sauternes, but we did get a Sauternes, and now what we're doing here, instead of the Montbozillac Sauternes comparison, we're actually going to compare it to a Long Island dessert wine, a late harvest Gewürztraminer from Duck Walk, vintage 2005. So we will see what we can kind of get in a compare and contrast from this.
Well, Dave, you usually have told me, for the listeners out there, Dave has just put some water into his wine glass, not to do that. But yet you're cleaning out your wine glass with water before the next wine. Why is that?
You're right. I usually don't do that. I usually clean it out with the wine that comes afterwards.
Would this be easier to taste the difference if the glass is cleaner?
Well, I just think this wine, because it is a dessert wine, it's kind of sticking to the glass. And I just kind of thought that, give it like a real clean rinse. I don't think it's going to affect it that much. The whole clean out your glass with the next wine is really kind of like an anal wine geek thing to do.
I didn't do anything. I just poured the next one in. So we'll see.
That's the straight up alcoholic way to do it.
Exactly.
Don't waste a drop.
That's me.
I usually get my brown paper bag out and sip it outside a convenience store before I rob the place.
This smells a lot brighter.
Yeah, this Gewürztraminer, late harvest Gewürztraminer, actually smells.
That's much different.
More
smell.
Like a wine,
yeah.
Actually,
more like
much
a regular
than
wine.
A dessert. Well, I mean, more like a regular dry wine than a dessert wine.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are some definite differences here. I'm making the assumption that Duck Walk did not let the quote unquote noble rot affect the wines, which is how Sauternes gets its sweetness. Did
this says well. It says it has a hint of botrytis.
Okay.
So
which is
the rot that the way they make sweet wines is to actually let the grapes rot on the vine.
Wow. And
to
it
get
sucks
really
out the juice
concentrated.
And gets them concentrated, so it becomes thicker. It becomes a thicker liquid.
So this says that they've done a hint of this.
Which would explain why it's not nearly as thick.
Like the sidekicks in Doctor Who, one of my functions is to ask the questions that the audience wants asked.
See, I like that.
It's much more balanced.
Yes.
It's more like that.
It's not like the honey bomb we just had.
Right.
I like the peach, the pear, I mean the apricot, and the kind of honeysuckle as opposed to honey. It's fragrant. It's floral almost.
It's a good wine. I kind of going back to the components. I got the acidity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get the sweetness as much.
I got the acidity in the exact same place as I did.
I did
last
too.
One.
I did too. Right towards the tip of the tongue.
Yeah.
Right there.
It hit the same spot.
I don't think it is as acidic though.
Oh no, I don't think it's as acidic. But I got it in the same spot. I was still able to pull it out. I wasn't as able to pull out the sweet, and it's. I just don't think it's as sweet a wine.
No. By no means.
I didn't pull out. Pull out the sweetness as easily as I did the other one, but it is still there, you know. And then you have all the other things that go you know, into making this a good wine, you know, all the different fragrances and that. There's obviously no bitterness to either one of these. And they're obviously tannins. Not tannic. Yeah.
I think this is more balanced.
I think it is much more balanced.
Yes.
Because even the acidity, because the funny thing is, you know, the acidity and the sugar were very evident in this Sauternes, but they were also very separate. So you kind of had this sense of, there's the acidity, there's the sugar, they're both big, and they're not exactly harmonizing, you know, to get, they are a little bit, you know, and it's not a terrible wine, but they aren't as harmonizing as they are in others.
It's easier to swirl around in your mouth and taste the different components with this one.
Yeah, because it's not as thick,
yes.
I think, for one thing. The other thing is that I think it's a little less acidic, a little less sweet, but they work better together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's is a much more balanced dessert wine to me.
That's a good description. It's a little less of both and in better harmony.
This is good. I think... You know, going through the lesson worked for me because I was able to define what I was tasting in terms of the acidity and the sweetness.
It makes you focus on it, you know?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
It's easy to pick up a wine and think you're going to taste it, but...
But to look for things after tasting.
Get really focused on it, you know? It's sense memory, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
You remember what that vinegar tastes like. You remember what those bitters taste like. So it's practice and memory.
I feel like we're the three critics on Iron Chef. And I should be the one that disagrees, the woman who's the fortune teller. Well, because after the two praise it extravagantly, she gets any dish and goes, well, I thought it could have been better had you used some 1962 sake and perhaps a touch of moon juice, which I don't know what that is, but I'm saying it. So what are we drinking now?
So we're drinking, Lisa, why don't you tell us what we're drinking?
We're drinking a Loire Sancerre, Domaine Gérard. This is probably just a step above a table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not an expensive wine, but this will be very dry.
Don't tell us.
13% alcohol, and it'll be quite a change from what we've had.
Or it should be.
It should be.
Let's find out.
It should be.
Yeah, you don't smell the... Well, I don't know if I could smell the... acidity and sweetness. She actually says that sweetness is not something that you smell, but the impression I get just from smelling this wine is that it's not going to be sweet because it's very minerally. It's very it almost smells crisp.
Yep.
You know,
which is how a good sensor should be.
That's hitting on a lot of different places in my mouth. And the one thing I'm getting that I didn't get before, because it's obviously a lot less sweet, is a little hint of sourness.
Bingo. Yeah, there's sourness there.
Yep.
And to your point, I think it's fair to say that tip of the tongue is where the acidity is registered the most, because that's where I got it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as intense as the Sauternes that we had. It was a little bit more intense than this late harvest Gewürztraminer that we had just before this. But it's all three have been in the exact same place. This sucked the moisture out of my mouth, which I was surprised for a white wine.
Very,
so this is definitely
very dry.
Very,
very dry.
Dry. And I didn't necessarily get that sensation of, like, the sugar would sweep most of my tongue. I didn't get that.
It seems like, but saying that, I think on the nose, it has, I can smell a little bit of the sweetness on the nose.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't offhand, but my nose is not as good as anyone else's here.
I can.
Yeah, the only thing about that, I think I have a hard time smelling sweetness because I don't know what it smells. I don't know what I mean, sugar doesn't really have a smell.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe it's a hint of honey or something.
But here's the thing with sweetness where I would constantly confuse it with other things. Honey, floral... you know, I mean, the whole idea of suggestion. I mean, if you tell me that I'm having a sweet wine, I'll be like, oh yeah. You know, you sniff it, and it's like, oh yeah, I can smell this sugar, but you really,
but you
sugar...
Really, yeah, you can get the distinction, especially with the honey versus regular sugar.
Yeah. If I smelled honey, I would be probably be more apt to say I thought it something smelled sweet. You know, but I actually don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah,
you know?
No, that's a good point, actually. Maybe I'm confusing it, too.
I rarely think wines smell sweet. I usually... can smell and
Except
limitedness. Ripple,
probably.
Well,
Ripple,
Thunder, obviously. Thunderbird. In a brown paper bag, obviously.
Yeah.
Smells A.B.'s Irish Rose.
Yeah.
But I don't get that from this at all, obviously.
No, I don't know.
I do get very aromatic. And then it really, like you say, it sucks you dry. And like the government, ooh, cheap shot there. And then it really does, I can taste, I think, three different things going at the same time here.
Mm-hmm.
The citrusy, definitely, very much so. The dryness, the sourness on actually top of my mouth. I can definitely sort of feel that sort of hitting there. It's interesting because we're learning not just about how the tastes are, but where the tastes are.
Where the tastes are.
Which is very interesting to me.
Yeah. But I think it does exactly what Miss Robinson here set out to do and teach us the stark difference between a really sweet dessert wine and a really bone dry.
And that's very apparent.
Yeah.
So now I understand the rationale for the order in which we drank it, but I still do think that the first one was so obvious and a little bit overpowering that it does become more of a challenge to try and pick out the exact tastes as you go along.
You mean to further wines?
Yeah, what I almost think, and I would hate to repeat the first half of this lovely afternoon again, that it would be just as interesting to do all those tastes, the sour, the bitter, etc., then hit any bottle of white wine after that, and then just really explore. Because I think you get, say we'd start with the Sancerre, we'd have gotten a lot more from the Sancerre than we did this way.
Right. Possibly, yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not going to try that experiment a second time.
Let's not forget, too, that despite the fact that this is very dry wine and that it's, you know, got a high acidic component, it also has sugar. I mean, it has to have sugar. It's not
wine. It's just not as apparent.
If it doesn't have sugar.
It doesn't leap out and grab you.
It's residual sugar.
Every wine has residual sugar.
Well, I think it's, we really should learn about residual sugar then. At what point does, like, a dry wine become a dry wine?
That's a good question. How much residual sugar does a dry wine have?
Yeah.
As opposed
to... Now, does she say in the book?
Well,
no, I don't think so. I think she just kind of talks a little bit more in broader terms.
One of the things she talks about is levels of acidity. Green or tart, crisp, flabby or flat.
This is crisp.
Cloying or too sweet.
Not cloying, not too sweet.
So...
where does it fit?
Crisp.
I think crisp and tart.
Crisp and,
crisp
bordering
and tart.
On tart.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where this is in the spectrum.
Yeah. And the first one was cloying and sweet.
Yep.
And the second one was sweet.
There we go. Okay. Residual sugar. Normally, bone dry wines seem to have no sweetness at all because they contain a tiny amount of residual sugar. Sugar content ranges from about 0.035 to more than 7 ounces per quart, with dry wines usually containing less than 0.38 ounces and often as few as 0.07. So there's a huge range.
There's a huge range,
yeah.
Yeah, this is on the low end of that range, I think.
Grape juice becomes wine when yeasts act on the sugar in ripe grapes to convert some or nearly all of it into alcohol. The resulting liquid is therefore drier and stronger than grape juice, but the amount of sweetness left in the finished wine, the residual sugar, varies enormously.
Yeah.
So, that's what you're talking about with this.
Well, this one is pretty easy to see that.
It's interesting that regular wines don't say anything on their labels about residual sugar, but quite often dessert wines will.
Well, I think that's one of the selling points of a dessert
yeah.
one, because you do associate dessert with sugar and sweet and that.
Yeah. The duck walk that we had does.
And I think it's more...
It tells us that the residual sugar is 8%, which would be...
0.08.
Yeah.
Yeah.
0.08.
You know, and I think putting the amount of residual sugar on a wine bottle is probably more new world than old world. You know, because we don't have any residual sugar.
No,
on this
I can't see why the French would want to put that on. It wouldn't be a selling point.
It wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
In a way, it's like, you know, it's a Sauternes. You know, it's sweet.
Yeah.
You know, you're what you probably if you live in, you know, in
yeah. But how many of your average wine buyers understand what residual sugar is anyway?
In France?
No, in the New World.
Oh, here. Oh, yeah. Well, this is. Probably why Miss Robinson saw a market for this book.
Good point. All right, Dave, what are we drinking now?
We are drinking a Côte de Gascogne. It's the region in France. It's southwest France. Domaine de Pouilly is the name of the winery, or chateau, or domain in this case. The grape would be a blend of Uni Blanc and Colombard, which we just learned earlier today. And according to the lesson here, this should be somewhere smack in the middle of the dessert wine and the Bon Dry Sincère we just had.
Definitely a different smell to it. Definitely
feels heavier in the glass, right?
Absolutely.
Has more viscosity than the Sincère.
Definitely not as dry.
And by deduction, there's got to be more sugar in here.
Yes.
I think the acidity is pretty close to the same, actually.
I think you might be right.
And I think it's probably... I'm not saying that this is a better wine than the Sincère that we had, but I do think this is probably a little bit more balanced than the Sincère.
It's not puckering my mouth the same
no.
way.
No.
Yeah. It doesn't have that sour characteristic to it.
No, either. No.
It has... that fuller mouth feel, though, mm-hmm. that you get with a sweeter wine.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I mean, this is off the topic slightly, but not so much. In terms of being food friendly, I wonder which one of these would stand up to the most dishes.
Well, I think that is a question as to which wine is most pleasant to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that not just among these wines, but and let's throw dessert wines out of this for a second, but which wine is most balanced, meaning, or usually meaning, which is most pleasant to drink, and that is probably going to add to your idea of whether or not it goes with the food.
I don't think that this wine is as complex, though, or as floral, or not floral,
absolutely
as fragrant.
Yeah.
It doesn't have as many interesting elements to it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it is somewhat more pleasant to drink on its own.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing, you know.
Well, I think what I'm learning here from this is that, so the deconstruction of the wine, you appreciate the different elements that go into it, the acidity, the sweetness, the bitter, the tannin, the all the different things that go into it, and we haven't even gotten into like aromas and things like that yet, but the basics, the fundamental basics of it, and the namely being acidity and sweetness, has really helped me better understand what balance means between the sweetness and the acidity, and which is not something that I've had before. Which I think when you're talking about balance, you're just talking about a pleasurable experience, but one that, you know, things don't stand out, you know, and there are some wines, I think, you know, that we've all had, which are really interesting wines to drink, and maybe even great wines, but you can't imagine having them aside from just the glass in front of you, because it would compete with everything else that you would eat or whatnot. I think what I've learned is that balance is important in terms of basic pleasure and possibly food and wine pairings when you're just talking about something pleasant to eat with something pleasant to drink.
I think almost anything you eat originally seems like a good idea with the wine, but having drank this without any food, it does seem as though, okay, it would lend itself to certain foods better than others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really... when you're drinking wine or tasting wine in this manner, I think it's very effective to say, okay, I can deconstruct the wine because I'm not concentrating on some spicy mustard or mm-hmm. some salami or a cheese with a very sharp taste to it on its own. So there's no competition. The wine just stands on its own. And you can say, I'm getting this, I'm getting that, I'm getting these things. And therefore, you can really ask, what would it go with? As opposed to saying, okay, I've got a red, therefore I've got to have some meat or some mm-hmm. steak or something. I've got a white, therefore I've got to have something lighter. I think, you know, something like this that we're drinking now would go with a lot of different things quite easily, depending on how you would flavor them, how you would mm-hmm. taste them, etc., what you add to the meal. And it's almost as though instead of picking the wine for the meal, this way you can pick the meal for the wine.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's a very good point. If I knew I had four or five people coming over to dinner, and that I was the one who was by far the most into wine, and that these people were not wine geeks, but just friends of mine coming over who like a glass of wine, I'd probably go with what we just had, the mm-hmm. Dominique,
yeah.
the Côte de Gascogne.
I would too.
Because it's more in balance, and now I feel like I would be able to tell that it's more in balance. And it would make me think, well, you know what, this would be something that my friends can kind of sip, say, oh yeah, this is a pretty good wine, and then go get back to the conversation, whatever table conversation we were having,
yeah.
which wouldn't center
yeah.
around wine. If
yeah.
if you get a bunch of wine geeks together and you're trying to come up with a dinner menu or something like you, I would do it the other way around. I would say, well, I got this great bottle. Let me go out and buy something that will help showcase the wine rather than
yeah. But you're pretty rare. You
know, well, that's yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Which is why I think. Why I think assessing balance in wine is important, you know.
I think it is too, and as she demonstrated to us, I don't think it's that complicated to break it down. It's just a matter of trying to identify these different tastes
yeah.
and flavors.
Yeah, I don't think it's that complicated. I think it takes a little bit of practice, and it's not something I think about.
No,
you know?
Nor do most Americans think about, which is why wine for most Americans is something you get at a restaurant or you drink table wine, as opposed to thinking about the pairings of things. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there are the wine snobs.
Or as Homer says, give me the second
yeah.
lowest price bottle.
That's what I usually
also,
yeah.
people go with grapes that they know. I mean, they see Chardonnay and they go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know what that is. I know what I think I know what I'm going to be getting, so.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, I think it goes even a little, further or step back. I'm not sure exactly what direction. You know, they know what they're getting and they ask for it. They've had it before, but I think they're asking for it because they don't want to think about it. Oh, Chardonnay, I know it's pleasant.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
then you go back to your bar conversation.
Well, that's why Two Buck Chuck is not a bad thing. It gets
yeah.
the idea that there is wine out there. I guess I like red wine. I mean,
yeah.
even a distinction like that, I like red wine with my meal, leads to people like my parents buying Two Buck Chuck by the case
mm-hmm.
and coming home with, you
and
know.
And that's a good thing?
It's a good thing because it's a...
I think it's a good thing, too.
It's a gateway.
Anybody of a certain age / generation should be given a pass on this.
Yeah.
I think because, I mean, we can get into wine history and all that, but, you know, but your parents came from the cocktail generation.
Oh, of course.
And, you know, and
key swapping generation.
And, you know, and I just think it's a hard thing to pick up if you're, you know, when you're,
but for
you,
say
when
someone
you've
that's,
been used to something
yeah,
else for so long.
Say someone that's 25 and doesn't know wine at all is going to get a Two Buck Chuck and say, wow, this wine stuff's not that bad.
And it's going to be a gateway, and I think that's why wine consumption in the U.S. is going up.
And
because
that's
because that's happening.
Yeah,
that's and there's so much more press about it.
But it leads to people eventually doing what we're doing here on their own, which is saying, eventually, what do I like? What do I like about wine? Do I
yeah.
like fruity? Do I like sweet? Do I like this? Do I like that? You
mm-hmm.
know? Do I like the sourness? And I think the more you have, the more you discern it, the more you can challenge yourself by saying, you know, I haven't had a Sancerre. I've heard it's not going to be to my liking, it's too dry, but I know I like certain elements of that. I know like a little bit of the sourness,
yeah.
et cetera, that I want to try that.
And you can go into a wine store and say, you know, I had this really dry white wine and I kind of liked it. Can you recommend something?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you just kind of start getting to that level, you can, you know, like you said, it's a gateway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
what have we learned, Charlie Brown?
Yeah, so let's parting shots.
Well, I feel like I, just from that short experiment, can understand the mouthfeel of these different elements better. I understand what's happening in my mouth. I feel like I'm drinking wine with a little bit more awareness of what I'm looking for. And again, I think a lot of it has to do with sense memory.
Yeah. For me, my parting shot, I'll boil it down into I think I have a much, much better idea of what balance means. And I think that's just going to help me go forward.
I think so too, as the least experienced wine drinker at the table today. I think the experiment, which I didn't even know the parameters of when I came in here to begin with, although I did drink vinegar for the first time in my life, I think it was in terms of what I learned and how to discern different elements and try and pick them apart, it was a very effective way of doing so. And it's once again, one of the things I try as a teacher to do is say, okay, that's your opinion, but what is the reason for it? You like this, but why do you like it? What is the rationale for your taste? I think if you're talking about any kind of taste, what do you like about certain things and dislike about other things is key. And the thing that most people don't like are things they haven't tried before,
mm-hmm.
because they don't know it. They like the familiar. And I think with this, this gives us an impetus to try different kinds of wine and break it open and say, what else can I look for? What else can I learn? What else can I apply to the next bottle of wine that I open and just look, okay, this bottle of wine pleases me for the following three reasons. It has this, mm-hmm. it has the certain dryness, which I now can articulate, as opposed to, I don't like this kind of wine, but not only I don't like it, not just it's too sweet, but also because of it has these three or four different things that I don't like about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, it makes me a more discerning wine drinker and buyer in the long run, that I can walk now into a wine store and say, what I really need is something that's a little bit citrusy, but more dry with a little bit of sourness to it.
Yeah.
Can you give me something like that?
Perfect. Yeah, that's exactly, that's a big takeaway. It's a big takeaway.
Definitely.
All right.
Well, so far her practice, suggestions I think are pretty good.
Yeah. Well, it's good because there are 102 in this book, so
we got a long way to go.
Coming up, number two.
Anyways, thanks for listening.